I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Night Gallery.
I want to see something.
How about that, Randy? They're tearing down Tim Riley's bar.
Can a man remain a genius when his mind is clouded by delusion?
An earwig. A kind of caterpillar.
Well, you're not going to die, and I won't let you.
Get gone! I don't belong here, I swear to you!
So you recount, huh?
The worst shock is yet to come.
But you see, for us, the important thing is this academy.
Yes, I distill it myself from marmalade.
Thank you, Daddy.
Do you know, do you have spiders?
Three and one. Three and one!
This isn't my family, they're stiffs!
I'd slap him. Quite correct. Do so if you will.
I am extremely particular, Mrs. Mount. Extremely particular.
I'm here.
There aren't any more McBain.
Zap. I took the liberty of amputating your feet.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to embark on a journey through a vast galaxy that traverses memory, generations, and popular culture. A magical trip through time as we meet the men and women of yesterday and today who have shaped not only what we see on TV, but the way we see ourselves. I'm Jim Benson. Join me, if you will, on an exploration of television's past, present, and future as we climb aboard the TV Time Machine. Our destination subject today will be the classic horror series Rod Serling's Night Gallery. Directors Jeannot Zwark and Guillermo del Toro will help navigate this particular excursion into the annals of classic television. We'll begin our exciting and fun-filled odyssey right after these brief messages.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
It's Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There, you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television, capturing television history, one voice at a time. Today on the TV Time Machine, we travel back to 1970, the year in which TV audiences began a series of weekly excursions through an eerie art gallery courtesy of legendary television writer Rod Serling. In this very special tribute to Rod Serling's Night Gallery, we are honored to be joined by two extraordinary directors, Guillermo del Toro and Jeannot Zwark. Guillermo del Toro is one of the industry's top film directors. His extraordinary Pan's Labyrinth was the recipient of three Academy Awards, and he's currently director of the upcoming sci-fi drama Pacific Rim. Jeannot Zwark helmed many of the finest episodes of the series and is probably best known for directing the classic fantasy film Somewhere in Time. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to join us for this after-hours tour, feel free to grab a paintbrush as we slip from the restraints of the present and enter a Stygian world of the past. Jeannot and Guillermo, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Well, gentlemen, this first question is for both of you. Where were you fellows born, and what first got you interested in directing?
Jeannot, please.
Oh, I was born in Paris, and I became what's called a cinéphile after I saw, which is, you know, like a guy who haunts all the cinémathèques and theaters, and if you're going to be a film buff, Paris is the best city in the world. And I saw Carl Dreyer's silent film, The Passion of Joan of Arc, and something happened, and that was it. That's where my passion for film started. And I pursued it after I finished normal studies. I just quit everything and started working for a documentary company in Paris. and that led me to where I am.
Yeah.
So it was a vocation.
Wow. Well, I was born in Guadalajara, Mexico, central Mexico, and fortunately or not, I was directing Super 8 films around when I was 8 years old, and before I realized that was called directing, because my father had a Super 8 camera, and I loved movies. I learned English through subtitled movies and a dictionary and Mad Magazine and Famous Monsters of Filmland. So I was a cinephile too, but I came through it both through TV and film, because obviously TV was, we had one of the earlier TVs in my hometown, and from almost inception, it became almost as strong an influence as film was. I didn't distinguish between prestige formats like film and air, as they would call it in the industry, which was TV. And so it's the same thing with comics and paintings. I adore Richard Corbin or Bernie Wrightson as much as I can adore Odilon Redon or Carlos Schwab or Renoir. It doesn't matter.
Jeannot, when did you first become aware of Rod Serling and his work?
Well, I had become aware of Rod Serling before. First, I was a sci-fi fanatic, and then I'd seen a lot of Twilight Zones. So I was very much aware of his work. And then I just started directing, and I did One Night Gallery, and I had a knack for it, and I loved it. It was a very exceptional experience. There's been nothing like it since then. The network didn't quite understand the series and wasn't crazy about it, and the studio didn't quite understand the series and wasn't crazy about it either. So we had a lot of freedom, and it was an anthology. And One Night Gallery led to another, and I think it was either Little Black Bag or A Class of 99, but Rod saw one of the shows I did, and then he said, oh, I want this guy to do my scripts. And then I ended up doing a lot of his scripts, and it was wonderful.
Let me ask you something, Mr. Clark.
Please call me Jeannot, please.
Jeannot. you directed several of my favorite episodes, including one of the ones I think is in the top three ever in the series, which is obviously the Caterpillar, which is perhaps the most memorable one of them all. And it's your style is very you have a range, a very wide range. You were at the same time one of the most modern guys in the series, meaning you were very aware of the what was hip and happening at the time, like in the Phantom Farmhouse,
right,
where you use very sort of hippie and pop aesthetics, and you use quite often you resort to the zoom lens, which at that time was incredibly modern, and not everybody knew how to use it properly and so forth. But at the same time, you do things like Little Black Bag and Caterpillar, which are very academically correct, beautifully staged. Caterpillar, I think, is gorgeous. The camera work and to me, it remains one of the few episodes in the series that really approximates film.
Correct.
And I wanted to ask you, do you when you were doing this series, you were absolutely in service of the story, and you changed your style accordingly, or were you finding it as you were directing this episode?
Well, first, please, I mean, all these compliments, I've been blushing like crazy, but it's true that the Caterpillar seems to have survived. Everybody remembers that one. I never made a difference. In a way, I'm a little bit like you. I never made a difference between television and film. To me, it's all film. Their parameters are different. You know, I have my own style, but a story kind of dictates content. And especially for Night Gallery. But so what it was also, we had a great production designer, Joao, and it was fantastique, like the French call it. Requires great aesthetics, and beauty, but also a sense of atmosphere. And I think that's what I was concentrating on the most all the time, is to find the right atmosphere.
I think that's particularly the case with Phantom Farmhouse, because it has tremendous atmosphere, even though the majority of it was shot during the day.
Yeah, I actually did the commentary on it, because it's an episode that seems to, you know, I remembered it, you know, it leaves an imprint when I saw it when I was a kid. It leaves an imprint of strange eroticism, and it leaves a bunch of information that doesn't seem to be, when you rewatch it or you actually just see it for the anecdote, there's a lot of the content that is in the atmosphere, in the texturing, and you know, is one of the ones I remember the music most vividly, and you know, I think there is a lot of really good moments in it. But let me ask you something else: how often and how, you know, there is this legend that I think is not completely true. Obviously, the budgets were tight on Night Gallery, but how involved and how often did you interact with Mr. Serling?
Well, on his script, it happened quite a bit. You know, when he, and also I was lucky enough, I did a lot of the intros to Night Gallery, which he presented. Mm-hmm. So we developed a relationship, and when I was doing his material, then of course there were questions, and I wanted to make sure that the intents were good. But it was not that involved. Jack Laird, pretty much, who was a hermit in his own way, worked mostly with the writers, and as far as the visual elements were concerned, it was left to the director, to the production designer, and to, we had a fabulous cameraman called Curly Linden.
Yes.
So, I know I'm giving you a mixed answer. There were also rumors that the relationship between Jack Laird and Rod Serling was sometimes tense. I never witnessed it myself, but it's true that Jack Laird was very talented, but a very bizarre and complex and eccentric human being. For the rest, I had more freedom than I've ever had on any television show.
Yeah.
In terms of style, there were never any dictates, like you got to do it this way or that way. Whatever we felt was good for the story. So it was wonderful, you know, I mean, like it was like doing a little movie.
How long did you have to shoot each episode?
Oh, that was, I mean, you won't believe it. But, you know, Caterpillar was shot in 3 days.
Yes, I would believe it, but it's amazing.
And Class of 99 was shot in, I think, a day and a half.
Day and a half, that's correct.
Wow.
That's right.
And now, because of that, I mean, sometimes literally, as Jim was saying, Phantom Farmhouse, you do something with literally almost nothing. It's all suggestion, and there is an instance, one of my favorite short episodes, which is Big Surprise. It's a beautiful terse story by Richard Madison, but the construction of the atmosphere is so vivid, and yet, you know, you did it, you know, in what was it, the back lot in the at Universal?
Well, yeah, and didn't you have to use what is termed negative space for that particular episode?
Yes.
Yes.
But it's not only for that episode. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, there was use of negative space a lot, mm-hmm, because we were shooting a lot at Universal. And the interesting thing was that Joe Alves and I would walk sets, and then we'd see something, and it was like something that had nothing to do with the show. And then we kind of steal it or pencil it in and then transform it. It was like guerrilla warfare in a way, because we couldn't afford to build everything for this anthology. So we were running around and not stealing, in quotes, using a lot of stuff that was existing at Universal.
That's right. As a matter of fact, in the episode The Diary, it's the set from the Columbo episode Death Lends a Hand, and
yes,
it's the identical set. They didn't do anything to change it.
That wasn't one of mine.
No, that was a William Hale directed.
Yes,
Diary.
Oh, Bill was a very good friend. Well, sometimes you couldn't. You know, the parameters were very strong.
Mm-hmm.
Content was the key, and to do justice, I mean, the Caterpillar, we had an idea, it was special. And, you know, the other thing about Night Gallery, which is amazing, is that because of the quality of the material, it attracted casts that were unbelievable. I mean, Lawrence Harvey had never done television before, and he said yes based on the script. Geraldine Page said yes, you know, Burgess Meredith, because of the material.
I have a question for you, because I did a part of a fixation for Four Night Gallery. Alfonso Cuarón and I both did a long stint on Mexican TV, on a horror TV series that was perhaps even poorer than Alfonso used to call it, the toilet zone. we had to shoot one camera 3 days per episode, but it was a half hour episode, one single camera, and we had what was called lighting parameters, meaning we could not get too dark, because then the engineer would say we're not recording it, because it's not to standards for the network. Did you have that type of barrier? Could you do go as dark in the photography, in the cinematography, as you wanted?
First, we were shooting on film, so that already allowed us to, you know, we could go dark. There were parameters from the network. The wonderful thing about Jack Ladd, because he was an eccentric, he never came on the set. He really liked people who could do it, and he could just work with the writers. There were no, I don't remember, of course, NBC was a little bit afraid of pure, what they called pure black. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't go in that direction too much. But most of the concerns with the series were content. I know Sins of the Fathers, everybody was petrified of that show.
I love that.
I know. I think it's, I mean, it's that and the Caterpillar and Cool Air are my favorite. But the content of Sins of the Fathers was so powerful that, frankly, at one point, we weren't even certain that we would be that it would ever go on the air. I remember when we finally, I suspect that Jack Laird really stuck his neck out, and I think Serling to an extent, too, because I don't know whether they were given permission to do the show, but the network was holding their final decision until they saw the material. And when we saw the material, it was so strong that we showed it to the network, and all they said, well, could we have a little bit less screaming at the end? And of course we said, well, no problem, and the show went on the air. But I still think it remains one of the most powerful things ever made on television.
It is along with Silence No, Secret Snow, and Caterpillar, and a couple more. It's one of those that approximates literature in a strange way. It has, and it's taboo breaking. I think that a lot of it is obviously implied and symbolic, but it's such a powerful, such a heavy, heavy atmosphere, and there's a sense of foreboding throughout the episode. It's one of the most memorable ones, and I actually, Jim may remember this, I was fighting to be able to do a commentary on that one too, right. But the studio only allowed us to record three commentaries.
That's right.
Three episodes.
Well, I think some of Night Gallery's best episodes are the ones where it deals with psychological horror, mm-hmm. where you actually don't see any blood, you don't see any gore. All of the horror is going on in the mind or in the actions of the people. And that's certainly the case with Sins of the Fathers.
Well, you know, Night Gallery was never obsessed with gore. I mean, it was much more in the tradition, of Fritz Lang and Murnau in the early horror, where, you know, it was used to make a kind of a commentary on life for human beings, and there was a very strong sense of aesthetic, but it was not at all what you do now, where there's buckets of blood.
I think the goriest one was Return of the Sorcerer.
Yes,
true,
it was.
True.
I agree. But it was not usual for Night Gallery. It was kind of unusual. But, you know, when you talk about Sins of the Fathers also, is look at that cast. I mean, I still can't believe we got that cast for television.
Unbelievable. Let me ask you that. Which of the actors you work with you keep the most cherished or fondest memory in the series?
Well, I think it's Geraldine Page. Mm-hmm. Because first I worked with her three times. The first thing I did with her was a Night Gallery, which was one day shoot, Stop Killing Me, where basically she has an 8-page monologue. And then we did Sins of the Fathers, and she was just wonderful. I mean, it was like, I mean, the analogy is a little bit outrageous maybe, but it was like driving a Rolls Royce. She was incredible. She had incredible range and acting intelligence. She was a wonderful human being. She was very simple, very down to earth. I have a very, very special place in my heart for her. And also Vincent Price, because I worked a lot with him on that gallery.
Yeah, what are your memories of him?
Oh, he was, well, he and I, you know, since I'm French, and he wrote this, I don't know if you're aware, Guillermo, he wrote a wonderful cookbook, which, by the way, everybody, which is based on the food of the best restaurants in the world.
Oh, I've heard of it. I've never read it.
Oh, I tell you, it's wonderful. It's simply wonderful. So we spoke about food a lot, and we spoke about film noir a lot, about movies of the 40s. You know, everybody forgets he was in Laura. So we spoke a lot about films of the 40s and about great restaurants.
We're going to have to take a little break from our fascinating journey, but never fear. I'll be back in a lightning flash with directors Guillermo del Toro and Jeannot Zwark, who are traveling with us on the TV Time Machine.